Hey, everybody. This is Katrina with Zooming in the Lens here for a special podcast. When we recorded this, it was Guru Purnima. And that is a Hindu holiday. It's a day that is set aside for all of us to celebrate the teachers in our life, whether it's academically or spiritually. If you look around, there's probably many people that have taught you many things in life. And today's the day to honor them. So you're going to hear that throughout the podcast. And most likely it has already passed. But in honor of that day, there's two very special people that I brought onto the podcast, two teachers for me, very great friends, part of my spiritual family as well. The first person is an astrologer, an author, and a spiritualist herself. There'll be lots more ways to understand what this person does. I'd like to introduce Rena Joy.
So many people ask me, when am I going to be happy? How am I going to be happy? I once knew a parakeet. His name was Happy. That's the only thing that's happy all the time. Nobody could be happy all the time unless you're catatonic. Yes, I am the Wiccan. I am the mother. I am the Jew. I am the woman. I am the seeker. I am the teacher. I am the student. What teacher could ever teach without learning? Without being a student, how could I ever even think that I could teach anything without learning and wanting to learn? And in the end, knowing, one time I said, I am standing in front of an elephant and I have a plastic fork and I'm gonna eat it. That's how I feel about what I'm learning.
Right.
Yeah, it's in a little tiny thimble and it's 50 years that I've been practicing. So that's who I am.
Also joining us today is Rena Joy's daughter, Kara, a spiritual sister to me and a woman with a lot of wisdom from life and what it's like to grow up with somebody like Rena Joy. So I'd like to introduce you to Kara.
We have the mother and the witch and the she can tell us stories and light candles and do magic. And I think everybody was in awe of that. And I don't think at the time I realized it in a spiritual sense that I'm in now and in the spiritual place I'm in now, that what I had in front of me and where I could start learning from then, I had to go through my own pain and journey and suffering and years of all the things I had to go through to figure out who I was. And it took me my own 20-some-odd years after that.
From anarchy to ashrams, and from Marjan to mayhem, to quote Rena Joy, welcome to podcast number 13 with Rena Joy and Kara Evans. And so tonight's a night to look at all the boundaries we've created in our life, even the boundaries like the gates around our houses or the fences or the boundaries on our hearts or the boundaries in our mind, like Gurdjieff talks about how we are the prisoners of our mind. And in a way, we might have been getting a little carried away with it, because what else are we keeping out? And is there cause maybe for us to renegotiate a little? So that we can open our hearts to even belief systems that are of no use to us any longer, or maybe faiths that now we never would have looked at, that maybe now can make some sense in our lives to us. So tonight is a night for finding balance. And it's done by looking at our intention. So if you look at the teachers that you've had and you see the lessons that they've given you and the wisdoms that they've shared with you, how does that get you balanced? And so there's a lot of nights, a lot of people out there that are going to be doing ceremony tonight. I'm definitely one of them. And I'm going to be looking at my intentions. And I know that my intention for today's podcast, although we miss SAS so much, I feel very grateful for this time and this space to be able to bring on two people, one in particular that I'm going to introduce you to now. She's very much been a teacher for me, and she probably doesn't even know that she's been a teacher to me, but she is a lot of the reason for why I'm here today, because when I thought about coming out to California years ago now, like most people, I was worried about the consequences of that. I was worried about making a decision that was going to be not the right one, as if there is a right decision. And she gave me freedom in that decision by holding down my ground and allowing me to expand myself and come here, knowing that I would always have a place to come back. And even prior to that, she's known me since, I don't know, maybe I'm 2 years old or so. And I've always been intrigued by who she is and by what she does, but I never really knew a ton about it. And then through the years, as I've, you know, been seeking myself, I've gotten to know her in that perspective as well. And it's only added to my admiration and the love that I already feel for her. As a mother, pretty much, as a mother and a sister and a fellow seeker. And she, in her own rights, is quite incredible. Her name is Rena Joy, and she was born and raised in the Bronx, New York. At this point in her life, she is 71 years old. She's been a spiritual counselor. She's an interfaith minister. She teaches the tarot cards and reads them for many, many years. I think it's going on 47 years, I think she's been doing this. What's really cool about what she does with astrology, she's trained with a lot of great people like Mark Weiss. If you're in that community of astrology, you'll know who that is. Chantel, even shamanism, a guy named Jimmy Starman has showed her the ways through being a shaman and through astrology. And she has developed through all her 71 years her own unique way to analyze tarot cards. And she's now teaching it. And rave reviews. People are coming from miles away to work with Rena Joy, and I don't blame them because she's been doing things like this for us, this is my spiritual family that I'm sort of bringing onto the podcast. And she's been doing stuff like this for me for a long time. And she wrote a book as well that I'm very intrigued to read, which I have not read yet, but it's called There Are No Secrets. And this is sort of a response to that whole craze years ago of The Secret. And the subtitle of it is The Ranting and Ravings of the Irreverent Reverent, which I love. The one thing that her and I have in common, of many things, is that she was actually very affected and influenced by Ram Dass. I remember her once, a couple of years ago, pulling out her original copy of Be Here Now. And I think it's all folded up because that was the cool thing about Ram Dass. He made it in this soft cover so you could fold it up. And I think there were rubber bands tied to Rena's copy. And she brought it out when she found out that I was working with him and studying from him. She has way too many great stories that I could even put into one podcast, but we're going to try to do the best we can with talking today about our storyline. The stories that we carry around of ourselves and how it serves us and maybe how it doesn't, how it served her through her life and maybe how it didn't. She has done lots of crazy things in life like I have. So if you're young or you know what, no matter how old you are, the things that we're going to talk about in this podcast might not be right for you. We're not saying it's the way. It's very similar to how Ram Dass talks about his psychedelic era and the way that he came about to going to India and meeting Maharaji, going from Harvard professor to a spiritual teacher. And it's not the way, it's a way. So we're not at all promoting drugs or that this needs to happen. So listen to these stories, please, with a light heart, taking into account that you are responsible for yourself and that in no way, shape, or form are we promoting drugs. We are just telling the stories of how Ram Dass calls it our spacesuits, our, as I call it, my Katrina 2, my ego mind, the life that we've lived. These are our stories. Everybody has them. And we can learn a lot from that. That's what teachers do, is they're willing to be vulnerable and get on things like this, like podcasts, and we're practicing. Because in the heart of it, what Zooming in the Lens is about is trying to expand our minds so that we can look at all sorts of models, whether spirituality or theology, systems, beliefs, faiths. And, you know, everybody does grab on and resonate maybe more so with one method than another at one time in their life. But hopefully you live a life that is filled with lots of methods, and you get stuck in and then you get out, and you get stuck in and you get out. And, you know, unfortunately, and fortunately, drugs are a part of that. They were a part of that for Rena's era. They were definitely a part of that for my era. And they were a part of that for lots of spiritual teachers. And they might be a part of your era now. What I say is that it's a great window, but it's not the way, as I said. So we're going to start now with Rena Joy, who's got lots of wisdoms to share with us. And we also have one of my closest friends, a definite sister to me, Kara Evans. And this is Rena's daughter. And like I said, probably the closest friend that I have, who's been through everything with me from anarchy to ashrams. And she's also a spiritual seeker, and sort of always has been, as you would imagine. She's the daughter of Rena Joy. So enough of me. Shut up, Katrina. Hi, you guys.
Hi, Katrina.
So happy to be here with you.
It's wonderful.
I can't tell you how great it is, because we're on Skype while we're doing this, because I have to see their beautiful faces while we're doing this. And I get to see them and see the house that I lived in during some of my most troubling years turn out to be my most greatest years. But who would have known that, right? So, Rena, I've known you my whole life, and I've heard some of these stories before. But even as we're talking prior to, like, pressing record, when you're signing up for this journey of looking inside of yourself, not a day goes by where I can look at somebody the same way as I did the day before. Everything becomes new. The mundane to the extraordinary. It's like that's the journey we're trying to find, because not everybody could just divorce their husbands or wives. How do we in life use our current existing life as our practice? And that's sort of where I really, you know, for lack of a better word, get a hard on. I get a hard on for how to look at the people in my life as practice, the ones that annoy the shit out of me, the ones that fill my ego with great, you're great, you're great. You should be this, you should be that. Why aren't you singing? All the trauma, all the praise. And as you're telling me these stories prior to getting on here, I'm seeing you yet in another way, as sort of like a Devi and a mother. And a mother not just of, like, you know, birthing process of another human, but a mother in lineage, a mother in divination, and a mother in wisdoms of just being around for 71 years and not really ever fitting in to that societal place. We all feel that way now. I have listeners now that write to me and say, I never fit in, or I don't want to, you know, get married or have a baby. And men that are like, I don't like how men are supposed to take care of women. And, you know, people that are, I don't know, I don't have a passion. What do I do for a living? Everybody's trying to find their way. And through spiritual practice, we find out that the way is what we're walking around with. It's inside. So I'm hearing some of these stories from you and seeing you yet, you know, in another way right now, which I'm so grateful for, because it's Guru Purnima. You were such an influence to me. And then living with you as I did and hearing the stories and going through such trauma as I was, and you just saying to me, this is just where you're at right now. This is just where you're at. Go spread your wings. And there's no easy ways to say goodbye. So you've moved to all these different places, from my friend's mother to witch to fortune telling to spiritual mom. And now you're all of those things to me and none of them. And now I look at you and I see myself. And I just see love. I just see love in your eyes. And I see, wow, I could have been enjoying that so long ago, right? But here we are.
There's no could have, Katrina.
That's right.
There is only what is. And I am an eclectic human being. You asked me before, who are you? I just am. I am male. I am female. I am God. I am mother. I'm father. I'm here. I'm open. I'm learning. I'm asking. I'm wondering. I'm questioning. So many different modalities I take. I take what I need from them and leave the rest. Because there's so much out there. Every day is to learn something more, to expand and to use it and to teach and to help. And that's what I was saying before. I'm so happy to be teaching people now the cards and astrology, because I know that it will go on. What I've learned will go on. And there's no definition. There's no label to who we are when we seek. There's just an open door to the most beautiful, beautiful scene you could ever, ever paint in your mind. There, one time I was up in Rhode Island, I was sitting and watching the Atlantic Ocean. It was so beautiful up there. And I got a message, and it was that there is a universal place out in the universe for all of us to understand why we're here, how to harness this energy, how to build a life that you could be proud of, that you could find happiness in. So many people ask me, when am I going to be happy? How am I going to be happy? I once knew a parakeet. His name was Happy. That's the only thing that's happy all the time. Nobody could be happy all the time unless you're catatonic.
Right.
Because we're humans. So we're up and we're down and we're sad and we cry and we laugh. Emotions are never right or wrong. They just are. The trick is to own yourself, to own who you are, not to cop out on yourself, to know the truth. That's my trick of staying sane and comfortable and grounded and unattached to the emotion that comes and goes and changes in me 1,000 times. Yes, I am the Wiccan. I am the mother. I am the Jew. I am the woman. I am the seeker. I am the teacher. I am the student. What teacher could ever teach without learning, without being a student? How could I ever even think that I could teach anything without learning and wanting to learn? And in the end, knowing, one time I said, I am standing in front of an elephant and I have a plastic fork and I'm going to eat him. That's how I feel about what I'm learning.
Right.
Yeah, it's in a little tiny thimble and it's 50 years that I've been practicing. So that's who I am.
Wow. Wow.
I'm here. I'm open. And I'm alive. And I celebrate every day. Whether I'm happy or not, I celebrate. I'm grateful. To me, gratitude and humility are the two ways that have kept me sane through all that I've been seeking.
Kara, what do you feel like? What do you feel like in growing up with somebody like that?
What do I feel like now, or what did I feel like as I was growing up?
What did you feel like as you were growing up?
When I was younger, I felt lucky, like I had that different mother. I had a young mother because she had me when she was young, and everybody wanted to come to my house to be with my mother. Because my house was cool, and my mother was cool, and, you know, all in my later years. I don't remember a lot of the younger days of her stories of the drug days and the her early on seeking, her moment of realizing that her life could be different and how to go about finding out the ways to get to her freedom.
Right.
But then the years you would remember, young teen years and into the mid-teens and tweens, and those years were, like you said, we had the mother and the witch and the she could tell us stories and light candles and do magic, and I think everybody was in awe of that. And I don't think at the time I realized it in a spiritual sense that I'm in now, and in the spiritual place I'm in now, that what I had in front of me and where I could start learning from then, I had to go through my own pain and journey and suffering and years of all the things I had to go through to figure out who I was. And it took me my own 20-some-odd years after that.
Right. And how are you different, do you think, now? Like, do you find a lot of people your age now that grew up with maybe more traditional mothers, and you see where you've ended up now? What do you think it's done for you now?
Oh, it was a great gift to mostly have somebody who accepted you no matter what.
You really felt that?
Oh, yeah, I definitely felt that. You know, somebody who listened to what you felt and what you said meant something, and you weren't that kid who was just a kid or told that your ideas were stupid or that your thoughts were not important. So those things helped me have a good basis for my journey, looking, you know, being different than other people my age who might not even be where I am now, and I'm really nowhere, but somewhere in a place of seeking and wanting to learn about me and wanting to understand life and seek my own freedom, and a lot of people I know never even got there. So, it's interesting.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I also just want to interject that if there's any sound issues, I apologize. But we're trying this a different way because obviously people not doing podcasts don't just walk around with a podcast mic and equipment. So, you know, in lieu of that, I really just wanted to do this. So if there is any sort of feedback or things like that, sorry. But it's too worth it to have not done it because of that. So... in saying that, I'm curious, Rena, you were telling me as we got on, like a little bit of a plot. You know, we were talking about Ram Dass's spacesuit, which, you know, it unites everybody in Ram Dass. I mean, I even just the other day Googled spacesuit. You don't have to Google, you don't have to put anything else in. Put in spacesuit and psychology comes up, theology comes up, mythology comes up. All of the ologies come up, and the isms. For those of you who don't know, the spacesuit is Ram Dass's way of saying, you know, we're born, and we gather our parents' wishes and beliefs onto us. They want us to be happy, and they mean well, but it's sort of their way of saying to be happy might mean to one parent, you know, grow up and go to school and... find your skill and make a lot of money and get married and have a baby. And you gather up your spacesuit also from teachers and from friends and peer groups and society and advertising and, you know, it goes on and on forever until you, you know, eventually, and not so eventually, it's always zippered up. So your spacesuit really reflects the parts of you that are created by all the external influences on you. So, you know, Rena and I and Kara were talking about the spacesuit, and it made me want to inquire about where this all started for you. Like, what kind of childhood did you have growing up in the Bronx, New York, in that, I'm so bad at math, I can't even add up when that would have been, but I guess it would be about the 40s you were born?
1944.
So, yeah, what was that like? What was your childhood like? Did you grow up with, like, spiritual parents?
My parents were atheists. There's no God, there's nothing. They're Jewish by birth, but had no religion. They were atheists. They were not agnostics.
Wow.
They said, there is no God, there's nothing. You live, you die, and that's it.
And you die, you're dead.
You die, and you're dead.
Right.
And I did not live with them until I was 10. My grandmother and my aunt raised me, and my grandmother was a chef. She was hardly ever around. And my aunt was a bitter, angry woman. So I raised myself.
Wow.
I had a younger sister. And many years later, we've talked about it, and we've asked each other, did anybody ever hug you? Did anybody ever say, I love you? Did anybody ever care what you wanted or what you didn't want? No. Did anybody ever give you a card or a present that was wrapped in paper? No. We had nothing like that. We weren't touched. We weren't nurtured. We were schooled with children are seen and not heard. You don't make noise. You don't ruffle the feathers. You don't laugh too much. And you don't cry too much. And that's what we heard. And then my parents came back together. My mother was sick for many years, and they came back together, and we got an apartment. My sister, my mother, and father, and I. My father was a bigot.
Wow.
And I had a friend, a little black friend. I was 10 years old, and she came home with me after school, and when she left, my father picked her up. He yelled at me, and he said, why don't you have white friends? What do you need black friends for? What do you need schwatzes for?
Whoa, yeah.
And I heard a voice. Remember, I was 10. I heard a voice, my inner guide, that said, don't listen to him. Never listen to him. And that was correct. I never listened to him again. He lived his life as an angry, angry man. And the thing back now, remember, this is in the 50s. So women were nothing. And my father was a big misogynist, a woman hater. And my mother was a meek, quiet, passive, ill woman. So it was not an easy childhood. And it was not where I was nurtured or knew anything about love. No one ever said, I love you, you're important. And it took me a long time and 15 years of therapy to understand what love was or even how to love myself. But remember this, in 1962, I got married because the buzz in the house was you stay at home until you get married. You cannot, there was no such thing as move in with a girlfriend. There was no such consciousness.
Wow,
so I married a very nice Catholic. He's a lovely, very quiet, nice man. And I moved out at 18. I got married.
And that was normal.
I had escaped. I had escaped them. And their rules and their rigidness and very small, frightened thinking.
Right.
And I've come to believe that fear and love are all there is. And fear-based lives are lives of small-mindedness and little thinking and bigotry and frightened of every new thing. And that's how they were. And they lived in a box like that all of their lives. They're gone now. There's no blame. I don't blame them. I am who I am because of them. But I wouldn't say it was a wonderful, loving childhood. And to add to that, I really didn't know how to love my children. I didn't know how to love them right or wrong. Kara is my first child. When she was about 9 or 10 years old, she came to me and put her arms around me and said, why can't you love me the way I love you?
Wow.
And she hugged me. And I fell on the floor. I passed out from the emotion of that. And from that day on, there's never been a time where I didn't hug her and hold her and tell her how much I love her. I was very bottled up and frightened about love and frightened that I'd hurt my children. or give them nothing the way I got nothing. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn. I went right after that, I started therapy. And I went for 15 years to get past my childhood and to open up the zipper of the spacesuit.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
to let some fresh air in and right. see that it's all right. It's all right. I, for a long time, I was afraid to be angry with my children. I was afraid if I yelled at them or I had to punish them, they wouldn't love me. Mm-hmm. And it was very frightening. I was very lucky with Kara because she was a very structured child within herself. She had a plan. She's Virgo. Virgo is order, logic. And I didn't really have to ever punish her because she was like my mother, a good mother that I never had. I could go to her if there was a problem. She was logical and orderly, wonderful. So
wow.
I didn't have to. With my son, he was more rebellious and angry, and I didn't know really how to deal with him. I had to learn. And that's why I say life is for learning. As long as we're open to it, and we could say, okay, I'm wrong, I'm sorry, I did the wrong thing, how could I fix it, how could I change this, where is it coming from? It's coming from not knowing. And it's a right not to know. It's just not a right to never want to know.
That's right.
That's not a right.
Well, that explains some of what I said to you before about not remembering the younger years, I guess. That's
I guess it does.
Interesting.
Right.
But also, you said a lot of times in subsequent years, Mom has said, I'm sorry for this, or I'm sorry for that, I'm sorry I wasn't there for you, or I'm sorry I wasn't a good mother. But the truth is, all the things that she was not as a child, allowed to speak, allowed to laugh, allowed to have an opinion, I was allowed all that. So that made me lucky, and I was told, you could have friends, boyfriends, it doesn't matter if they're white, black, brown, polka dotted, everyone's welcome. If you're happy, I'm happy. So what better thing, gift, can you give to a child than letting them be heard and have a voice and feel like they're important?
Yeah. Well, she was learning from what she didn't want, and I can understand how that can maybe almost leave you paralyzed to not want to make a move, Rena, because you've got the perfect child that is sort of self-monitored, self-balanced. So, like, what a grace of God.
How's about, don't go to school today, we'll go to the city, we'll go shopping. Oh, Mommy, I have a test.
Kara.
Just wonderful.
Yeah.
And I didn't say it to test her. I don't have any shtick. I don't have any hidden agenda.
Right.
I am who I am. Well, I just wanted to hang out with her and go to the city. I mean, I have a test. This is wonderful.
Wow. Well, what in regards to your spiritual practice, being astrology and your spiritual counseling, how did you get out and when did you get out of that sort of hole you felt like you were in, and how did it happen? Like, walk us through what that was like.
How did it happen?
How did you wake up?
Okay.
Well,
you really want me to tell you?
I really, really want you to tell me.
Here's my story. We're going back to just about 1970. Okay. And up until then, I was seeking and searching and looking at Wicca, and I had found a book by Madame Blavatsky called The Secret Doctrine, and it was about the world of theology and women breaking out of the pattern, and she was from the 1800s. Anyway, a cousin of mine came up to visit. At this point, I had a year-old son upstairs sleeping, and Kara was six in her bed sleeping. And my cousin said, you want to get high? And once in a while, we had smoked a little pot, my husband and I. I said, okay. She said, open up your mouth. She put a hit of acid on my tongue without telling me what it was. And I, right, I got very high, very fast. I was wandering around the house and I found myself in the bathroom and looked in the mirror. I had painted on eyebrows. I had glued on eyelashes. I had blonde hair with a hairpiece with curls or fake hair. And I said to myself, "You're wearing a mask. This isn't real." So I took the hair off. I cut my hair. I was a hairdresser. I cut my hair. I washed the eyebrows off. I took off the eyelashes. Never, ever to do that again. It was the beginning of my quest to change my life that night.
Wow.
Let my hair grow out, natural brown, and went from, as my another book that I'm writing is called, From Marjan to Mayhem. Because at that point, I was a housewife. Living in a very housewifey community with husbands and wives and dogs and cats and a fence and the whole suburban thing that was supposed to be the every American dream. And I changed overnight. And my friends changed.
Were you not happy?
I was happy.
You were relatively happy?
Yeah, I was.
Well,
sure.
Wait a minute. Is happy not a perception at the time?
Absolutely.
Because I could
yeah.
ask me if I was happy 20 years ago, and I'll tell you, I definitely thought I was happy. If you asked me then, I would tell you I was happy. If you asked me now, I will tell you I was asleep.
Right.
Right.
So right. I was living, Couples came out, John Updike's Couples. It was a book about living in suburbia.
Right.
In our couples. And everybody was married and everybody had kids. And I played Marjan three times a week. And I was a Jewish housewife, whatever you want to call
stereotype.
It.
Stereotype.
Stereotype, exactly. And that hit just took me right out of that bag.
What did you see?
And what I saw was the falseness of who I was. Well, not too long after that, I came upon a book. And the book was called Be Here Now by Ram Dass. And it was another piece that was missing. I read that book not only with my eyes, but with my soul and my guts and my pain and my heart and my body. I read it. That's why when you saw my copy, it's bedraggled. I cried tears on it, ice cream dripped on it, tea, coffee, you name it, mushroom tea. So I got into heavy psychedelics after that. For about 2 or 3 years, I tripped every day.
Whoa.
Because I loved the transition, that first whack that I had of this isn't you.
Did you always get back to that feeling? Every consequential
you know
hit?
What? Katrina, every day I get back to that. This isn't you. Well, who am I going to be? Let's see. Let's live the day and see what comes out. It's wonderful. It's exciting. I never went back to the box that I was in. And that book changed my life. That book changed my life. I never went anywhere without it. That's why it has rubber bands and tape and everything is on it. Children's cereal fell on it, it's tablum. It went through changes with me. And of course, all of his books. And I went to see him.
Yeah,
and
tell us about that.
From the Fillmore, when he was a real freakazoid with the long hair and the schmatas he was wearing,
yeah.
to where he spoke at Rockland Community and his hair was very short and he looked a little preppy then. Through all of his changes, I saw him up in the Catskills one time. He did a wonderful weekend retreat before he got sick. But I followed him. I have every book he ever wrote. And like you, he was a great teacher to me. And
what a great day to honor him, then.
Yes, and I do. I honor him. I wear his hat that you gave me.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah, he's been a great part of my life and the changes I've gone through. And I'm eclectic, as I said. So I love the Navajo teaching. I love it. I love the Wiccan teaching. I love the Kabbalistic teaching.
Yeah.
You know what's in the Kabbalah? What's in the Kabbalah is how to get out of here as an evolved being so you never have to come back. How through compassion, unconditional love, acceptance, tolerance, patience. These are the things in the Sephiroth of the Kabbalah. Simple, yes?
Yeah.
Very difficult.
Very difficult.
That's being eclectic. I love the Buddhism. I love the Zen. I became a Nichiren Shoshu Buddhist for a while, chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo.
Mm-hmm.
I love that, but I move on. I take it with me. I move on.
Yeah.
I'm still moving on, and I always will move on. A wonderful Cherokee man told me one time, he said, if you're 100 years old and you have 15 minutes to live, you could change your religion, you could change your mind, you could say you're sorry, you could fall in love.
That's right.
There's no end to it. It's just a wonderful dance. So that's where I'm coming from. And I honor it. I honor my past. It's okay. Some people would say, oh, you poor thing. No, I don't feel that at all. I feel I was allowed because of what I didn't want to find what I wanted.
Mm-hmm. So when you it totally makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. And we all have those choices to walk around with the story of our past. And it's really hard. I don't say this lightly. There's, you know, a lot of people that can't let go of the past. And you know, maybe it's just possible that they're not supposed to at that moment because there's some more burning that needs to be done. Nobody wants to hear that, but I've got shit. You know, Ram Dass has still got shit. We've all got neuroses. I think, like, it's so important and hard, you know, to understand when you're first starting out that you're not trying to get out of this world by throwing it away. It's not that we're looking at our past and saying, I'm so glad that happened. And we're also not looking at the past and saying, that sucked and I hate that happened and it ruined this and it ruined that. You know, right in the middle of that place is that what's true now is that you're here and you have a choice. And that choice for self-love has to come from an acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's nothing we're going to think about now in our minds, right? Just talking about the mind, the ego mind, that storyline that is going to rescue me from the past. So when I look at it in practical ways, you know, through my journey, I think I can hold on to this and keep reliving it. You know, that story about holding on to hot coals and hoping the other person gets burned.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it feels like. And everybody listening gets that. That's a human right we have, is to sit there in anger and to sit there and resent. But, you know, the mind's job is, as far as I'm concerned, the mind is fantastic. The mind is doing its job. It's there to tell us, you know, how to run cars and how to drive and how to bring the fork to our mouth and how to learn social skills and how to maybe do this or do that. It's just that when we get wrapped up in that, when we zip up that spacesuit, we lose vision of the giant mountain that's underneath the spacesuit. It's just like anything, right, you guys? It's just like anything. If you're, how many times have you heard somebody say, I'm only attracted to blonde men that are six feet tall, right?
It's called an imago.
An imago? Is that what you said?
I-M-A-G-O.
Imago.
It means that you have an image, and that's it. You have an image of what attracts you, and you want a tall, dark-haired man with blue eyes.
Right.
That's it. Nothing else. Your mind is funneled into that.
Yeah, and that is the mind's job, is to say, what do you want? Okay. Well, the mind says, what have you seen in your subconscious growing up? You know, and you never know. At 4 years old, you saw somebody with a guy like that. You wanted to be her. You liked it. You liked the way it felt. Who knows if it's a soul level or an incarnation level, whatever it is. And we walk around with that story. I only like blondes that are 6 feet tall. What's the story that we all got, Kara?
Well,
maybe not from your mother or anything, but from our, like, a short man is not somebody we wanted to date. Do you remember that story?
Of course.
Right.
Absolutely.
So we walked around with that story. And that story, now broaden that, right? Just to finish my thought. Broaden that to Christianity is the only thing. Wiccan's the only thing. Hinduism is the only thing. Being a man is better than being a woman. Women shouldn't vote. Burn your bra. Don't burn your bra. Push your tits up so that you have more cleavage. Wear pads. It's not cool to age. Get this, get that. The mind is a concept itself. The mind does not exist without us. And the mind is what's thinking, I only want a dude that's blonde-haired and 6 feet tall. So all of it is concept, right? And when we trip, I haven't tripped in years, so I'm not speaking from current experience, but from my past of tripping more times than I even would ever want to admit, or could count, to be honest with you, you are catapulted out of the models.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is no longer that small mind thinking, I only want a dude with blonde hair that's 6 feet tall. Everybody is that blonde-haired guy that's 6 feet tall. Everybody, you are that blonde that's 6 feet tall.
That's right, yeah.
Meaning that the feeling you get from getting what you want is with you in that moment of tripping. And you can get that from even being on other drugs. It doesn't even mean that it has to be a psychedelic. I mean, I know plenty of people that have gotten that from other things. But I think psychedelics, more than anything else, is really like a funnel to that place. So in walking around with the ego mind, the more we hold on to these concepts, the blinders are on, the smaller we get. And we lose that vision of the mountain. We lose that vision of what could be and what's possible, because as we grow up, people even say things to us like, stop acting like a child, or don't be so silly, or why are you so morbid, Katrina? You want to talk about death, or were you just talking about that?
Yeah, we talked about, I'm sorry. To
no,
up,
please, please.
We talked about having just seen that cartoon movie.
Inside Out.
Inside Out.
Oh, God, yes.
Okay.
Did you see it?
I did.
We could just talk about this for hours.
Loved it.
But
it did.
Really,
it was really great.
If there's ever a depiction of being inside of your mind, and the way that they had all of her little outer islands, the island of family, the island of friends,
yes,
and how the island of silliness,
yeah,
and how those things fall off because we don't, we just had that example. We don't keep it with us as we get older. And it brought
meaning
something up.
Meaning you two don't.
No, meaning we as humans.
I like to call them.
You like to.
Yeah.
As we get older, this was something.
Me too.
Yeah.
Look, and behind you, I made you that art.
Yes.
I made her this lamp.
I like to blow bubbles. I like that. I like to be silly.
Okay, most people.
Yeah.
But Sass said something in an earlier podcast about playing. And if I called you up, and I don't mean me and you because we might be a little bit different and more open, but the average 40 or 50-year-old woman is not calling a friend saying, let's play house, I want to be the mommy, you be the baby, and let's go in the backyard and make a whole magical, made-up creation, and we're going to play now. But why not? Why did we do that when we were 6 and 7 and love it? And we couldn't wait to do it again. We want to do it every day. But now, somebody would look at you with puzzlement and bewilderment and judgment.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody asked you if you want to go outside and play pretend and build a magical castle and be a queen, and you didn't want to be the wicked ugly queen, you know, all those things. So back to what you said before about, you know, the not wanting to date a short guy or not wanting to, you want a tall blonde guy. I think those are things that are learned through a book or a movie or a model of something else we see. And we don't even know why we think those things. I couldn't tell you why. It's just something, just like you in the Maynard story. You didn't know why you didn't like it. You just said you didn't like it your whole life.
Yeah, that was another podcast she's talking about where I said, I walked around saying that I didn't like mayonnaise for the longest time. I mean, we'd even tell people on my rider when I was touring, like, no mayonnaise. I mean, I was demanding there be no mayonnaise on any of my sandwiches. I hate mayonnaise. I don't like it. And, you know, through the practice, however trivial this may sound, honestly, it does start with things like this, where you just say to yourself, let me just check in on that. And I asked myself,
where did it come from?
Yeah. And you know what? Where it comes from didn't matter so much. Like the concept, I know it came from my mother, but what mattered is that I questioned my thought. And my thought was, I hate mayonnaise. And when I started to look at the word hate, I'm like, wow, that's pretty strong. Like, I want to watch what I say I hate and what I say I love. Not watch it, but I mean literally witness it, right? Allow myself to say it, but then witness it. And then when I followed the thought back, I just started hysterically laughing, giggling, like that sort of like cosmic giggle that they talk about, in that I never tried mayonnaise. That was the whole point of it. And here I was just walking around saying it. And I'm not saying that. There's definitely science around who we're attracted to. Without a doubt, there is that part of us that, you know, listen, on the spiritual plane, we might say we've known that person before, but even not on a spiritual plane, in science, there is that system that says that we are subconsciously from a natural place looking for the best mate to procreate, to keep our species alive, to keep our seed going. And so the reasons why I might be attracted to somebody in my mind may be because they're tall and blonde, but our systems are so highly evolved to be attracted to the best person that would match me even in a DNA way, so that I will create the species and keep my lineage going. So
survival of the fittest.
Absolutely. Reptilian brain stuff, even deeper than that sort of cellular stuff. So yeah, we have that stuff. But that stuff goes on. That's the incarnation. That's our human experience. It goes on. Can we let it go on? But at the same time, question when the mind makes statements without really knowing why. And our society is the type of society, Carita, that you were talking about, of if I was to ask somebody, well, why are you attracted to a blonde and 6 feet tall, that it's completely okay that somebody responds to me and goes, I don't know, I just am. And that's the end of it. Really? Yeah. You don't know why? You just start? No, I don't know why. I just always have. Well,
you know what I would have to say? Because your sister reminds me of one of those, but the people I've known from my own experience that have closed their minds to options and tell themselves they only have certain options are the loneliest, saddest people I've ever known.
Mm-hmm.
In general, because they've set in that thinking that they've told themselves this story over and over again so many times and come to really believe it, that they're so adamant about it that they don't open their minds to any other options or possibilities. It's not even on the table of something they're willing to learn. And when you're not willing to learn something and you're not willing to meet someone or you're not willing to make a new friend or go to a new place or experience something because you have it in your mind that you don't like it or couldn't like it or won't like it, then you've really shut down a lot of possible beautiful things or loves or dear friends that you could have in your life.
Well, that's right.
You know, I've always been a very curious person, but I have a feeling that you are talking about me probably 10 years ago. And I know that, you know, and that's okay. But I have a lot of compassion for that because I think that's the human predicament. Like, you know, you, Kara, were raised by somebody that was very open and wide and allowing you to be. And, you know, of course, we're here with the presence of somebody that's lived 71 years through generations of cultural and societal things that have changed our country, even, let alone the human species. I mean, there's like internet now, you know, you wouldn't have dreamed of that back then, right? But I think that that is what life is. Like, so the person you just explained, I think, is all of us. We're all somewhat in that place of, I don't like mayonnaise. And I can't tell you why I'm attracted to this person or that person. I just am. Because why do you think they modeled the computer after our phenomenal brain, our mind? No computer's ever going to be as amazing as this mind because, you know, I like to believe we have consciousness, but whatever, even without consciousness, we have the cerebral cortex that allows us to look back in at our thoughts and be conscious and say, I don't like mayonnaise. Who just said that? I don't like blondes. Who just said that? I love salted caramel ice cream. Who just said that? But when you are raised and when you're not surrounded by what I like to think of us as, which is a spiritual family, the satsang, the sangha, when you're not, this is brand new to some people, no matter how old they are, no matter how young they are, no matter how many people tell a 10-year-old, you're an evolved soul, you're an evolved soul. Listen, everybody has their journey and we're all here living out this practice. This practice is our human experience. And I believe that part of it is also being trapped in the mind. Because if we don't start as somebody, we can't get to be nobody. And that really is where the freedom is to have that devolving, you know, that not disassociation, not disattachment, not cold and uncaring and I don't need anybody because I'm this evolved soul.
My God, no.
No, you both know that, right?
Dropping off of all the losing, all the labels and all the restrictions and all the things we thought we were or the things we thought made us who we are.
That's
or
right.
The labels that we've got stuck to us over all the years, unsticking them and peeling them off takes a lifetime.
And I'd be so full of shit right now if I sit around here and say that in my conscious mind, in my, you know, my mechanisms here, my cerebral cortex, I forgive everybody who did everything bad to me ever. All people are great, and I love everybody. And
that's where I see.
I just bullshit.
What I put on Facebook. I drink green tea, I meditate, I'm spiritual, I still want to slap somebody.
Right.
That's ridiculous.
It is, and it if you're there, you're there, and you don't really talk about or think about being there. You know what I mean? I think that there's this part of us that needs to understand, at least for me, and I can really only speak for me, finding out through experiencing it, didn't matter how many times Ram Dass has told me or the millions of other people out there, or Alan Watts, or Meher Baba, or Ramana Maharshi, or Ananda Maimai, Dalai Lama, Deepak Chopra, it doesn't matter how many times people tell you, it's only through experiencing that I first tried to control the mind, quiet the mind, get rid of the mind, control the breathing, control my body with postures. I felt like I needed to be fixed because of me. Now, then you go down the therapeutic trip, right, where it was my mother's fault, or it was my father's fault, or it's society's fault, or it's culture's fault, or whatever. And then, you know, with a shift to that, through practice and through getting on with it, you decide you're going to wear, as Ram Dass says, the spacesuit of somebody spiritual. And so you meditate and you drink chai tea and you go to ashrams and you go to conferences and you do what you think you got to do, take yoga teacher trainings and whatever. All of it great. All of it probably essential to then where you start to feel that it's not in spite of all of that. It's not that we try to get rid of that. We're not trying to get rid of the mind, because as I tried to do that, the more I tried to do that, the more my heels dug in, the more I sunk deeper into the method of the mind.
Because, Katrina, we are mind, body, soul, and heart. There is no time that any one of those entities that makes us human is separate and apart. That's what makes us whole. I call mine the monkey mind. And I have a trick. If I keep, when I wake up, if I open both eyes, I'm done. The monkey starts chattering. I'll be thinking, you gotta go to the bank, you gotta do this, you gotta go shopping. That's my monkey mind. But if I only open one eye and leave the other one closed, I could say, and go back to sleep for a while. But you can't walk without your mind. It's one time I was driving the car, and it was a snowy night, and I was very tired. And this is what I hear. I'm alone in the car. I hear, all right, take a nap. And out loud I said, what the hell are you talking about? What do you mean take a nap? Who are you talking to? What are you, the devil? But it's me. It's part of me. And I hear that. Okay, eat the bag of cookies. What the hell? So you'll gain 5 pounds. This is totally against what I want, but it's my mind.
Right.
And I have to tame it.
Yeah.
And calm it and listen to it and love it and nurture it just as much as I do my soul and my heart and my body. Because you can't be a body without a mind. You can't be a spiritual being without thinking things through and having a grounded plan.
Yeah.
You can't just fly off into the cosmos in this life. We have to go to work. We have to make money.
Right.
We have to have a plot. We have to have a plan. We have to have a substance.
Right.
These
right.
are the stories of our lives. Otherwise, go to the city and you'll see the young fella laying in the gutter with an empty bottle of gin on him. Because the fear took him over, or his mind went blank, and he just listened to the devil in him. We can't do that. We have to weigh and measure every day. What am I feeling? What's really going on here? Why am I thinking this? How could I make it better? So that I could be healthier in my being. In all ways. That's why we go to the gym. That's why we go to the ashram. That's why we treat ourselves with ice cream. And that's why we go run in the park. And that's why we do spiritual things. And that's why we learn and go to school. Because we're feeding every part of ourselves that wants to be and create a wholeness. We want to be whole. And we can't be whole without listening to the brain.
And unlike, you know, unlike the world, it is inside of us already. It's not about finding the right things in the outside, but they do help at the same time. But the things that you're getting from the external world are only resonating to that part in you that is already whole and allowing that some safety so that it can give you space enough for that part of you to start to be cultivated. And I find that cultivating the witness and the work in that, and in just literally, I want salted caramel ice cream. Who just said that? Mm-hmm. And I don't like mayonnaise. What am I saying? the likes and the dislikes. I've had a lot of luck in with my students, and definitely with myself, obviously, in just taking an accounting of when my mind says something, who is that talking? I'm not saying who is it talking, is it my mother or my father, but literally who in me is saying that? And just when the answer is not important, what's important is that literally you have the ability to look back in at yourself. That means that there's more than just who you think you are.
That's right.
Yeah.
And right. You don't have to be anything other than what you are, a banker, an accountant, a witch, a rock and roll singer, a designer, a philosopher. You're exactly where you need to be, not from some woo-woo place, but because you're there.
That's right.
It's not...
I be here now.
That's right. It's because you're there. Be here now.
That's right.
And so how do you be here now? The practical applications of being here now. I would love to know, Rena, how your practice and 71 years of... like, how do you mold the astrology into a practical... do I have to believe in the astral plane? Do I have to subscribe to... is there somebody telling you, whether it's not a somebody or an energy or a field, do I have to believe that there is a future for me for you to be able to tell me what it is?
That's a very interesting question. Hmm. Of course there's a future for you, and there's a future for all of us. It's unknown. The cards give a suggestion. I have never, ever told someone what to do. Who am I to tell them? I'll give a suggestion, because when you sit down with the intention to read, the cards pick it up. I it's hard to explain it, but after 50 years of doing it, I trust that the cards, anything you divine with, want to help you. Astrology is, look, if you went to a quantum physicist and said, tell me what I am in one word, they would say, you are stardust. Because we are everything that's in our cosmos. We are zinc, we're copper, we are all the metals, we are connected to all of the planets. Look what the moon does. It rules the tides. We're 78% water or something. That's why people say, oh, full moon, no wonder I'm nuts. It rules the water. Mm-hmm. Astrology is sort of like a story. Your chart, the moment you're born, is a story about how you're going to build the armature, the wires inside of your being, and how you're going to form them into a whole human being. Where the moon is, where Mercury is, where Venus is, they all have a reflection, just like the moon, on who we are. So I can look at your chart and tell you, yes, you. I could tell, say I'm sitting with someone and I see in the chart, you'd be a wonderful teacher. 9 times out of 10, they'll say to me, I am a teacher. 9 times out of 10.
Well, use me as an example. Do you remember any of the stuff that you had ever read?
I've given you readings way before Lux.
Right.
Must have been 25 years ago. Carol was newly married and had moved up to Middletown. And you came up way before you got married. Mm-hmm. So it had to be a good 25 years ago.
Right.
And you asked me specifically. And we were laying down in Gary's bed, and I opened up the cards for you, and it was before Lux, and I said, you're going to travel. I remember that.
Wow.
Little things.
Yeah.
I remember. But the best memory, like I always tell you, is the first time I saw you in your baby doll pajamas, standing on the steps, sucking your thumb.
I still do that, by the way.
I just do it sometimes. holding a doll, a little doll in a blanket. You were so cute. You were a baby.
Oh.
And I've watched you grow. You talked about me before. Well, let me say this. I've watched you grow, not only with you living in my home with me, but all through the years. Everything that you've gone through, I've come to see you sing and had such pride in seeing that and how beautiful you are on stage. And now I see you as a teacher, as a wise woman, so beyond your years and so beautiful. I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of who you are. And that's, you are everything. You are so much. As I sit here looking at you, Katrina, at the changes in your face and in your being as you sit there, you are, the world is around you. You're emanating such wonderful energy. I could see it in your eyes and the changes that you've gone through from a marriage to not a marriage, from flying off and getting free. And I'm so happy for you. And there's so much more. And that's what I try to tell people. There's so much more than you think. If you just open up your heart to the possibilities to live without being afraid. And that's what I see in you. That you're not afraid. You're not afraid to let the voice come out of you and to be yourself and to say whatever it is. It's all purposeful, what's coming out of you. It's purposeful, it's directed, it's grounded, and yet it's very deeply mystical. So what you have ahead of you is more and more. And it's all good.
Well,
that's,
I'm not going to tell Katrina too any of that. That was strictly a Katrina 1 conversation. Wow, I won't even address that, but that's just the sweetest thing ever.
You have to blend it all. You have to blend all of it. And so that we could feel our lives and our stories have passion in them and purpose in them.
Yes.
A sense of purpose.
I meet so many people now that I see behind their eyes this curiosity that just wants to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's the most essential part of seeking alternative thinking. I don't even like to use the word spiritual because it has such a thing on it. It has like such a model on it, you know. But
tree hugging, granola.
God, yeah. I mean, you don't even know. I can't even imagine, nor do I ever think about what people might think I've cashed in my rock star ticket to come here and do this, and I must
be
crazy.
Yeah, who cares?
My two might. I'm not really thinking about it, but my one just says, I love you too.
Good.
There's not much more I can do except for that I know that this is all part of it and that I don't need to forsake that and say, well, now I'm onto this, so singing was really this. You know, I find that a lot too with relationships with people. You know, they end them and then you know, the husband or the wife will down the husband and, you know, the ex. And I always sort of had found that in common with you, Rena, that that never made logical sense to me, that I would spend my time even for a second with somebody and then say it was, they're horrible or this was that or they're bad or.
Oh my God, no. I'm very good friends with my ex-husband.
Me too.
And I was with Kara's father. He's unfortunately passed on.
Yeah.
And their wives. Why should my children feel that it was hatred? Why should they do that? I don't understand that. I see that all the time with divorces. I think it should be very, very hard to get married.
I do too.
Very
yeah.
easy to get divorced.
Yeah.
It's all
I
twisted.
Think, yeah, I do
and
too.
Children so often are the pawns of that. I never, ever said a bad word to my children about their fathers. I encourage them to know them and be part of their lives and their wives' lives.
Yes,
so then,
and I don't think, you're even worth, like, we're worth that just for ourselves, you know, not even our kids, because
Who needs that?
We can't give our kids that stuff if we don't actually own it, like you said.
Right.
And I think that that's just another example of how we feel like it has to be one thing or another. It has to be, I have a day job, I can't do practices, or right. I'm really spiritual, I can't go be a waitress. And like, you know, now I'm not married to this person, so now I don't like them because I have to make everybody understand why I now want to be with this person. So I have to make this person look good and the past person look bad. And what I'm saying really is that we don't have to sacrifice our regular societal 2015 world to be in search of, to practice. It's simultaneous. I simultaneously am Katrina, the rock singer, and Katrina, the this. I could go out and have a beer, and I can go sit and chant in an ashram for 24 hours a day. I could sit in a mosque, and I can go to a Jewish temple. And and I'm both a woman, and I'm both a man. And that's I'm both just nothing, and I'm everything. And I know that sounds weird, because you know what you were saying before? I can't explain how astrology works. I can't explain who's answering this or what energy or this. And you know what? That's the good sign to me, Rena, because it's like that's a mind's job. It's a mind's job to make everybody listening right now understand. And yes, there are really gifted people like Ram Dass and Alan Watts and many more that have, you know, these analogies and these methodologies to get us to see a little bit of the light. But even those people cannot make the horse drink the water.
That's right.
You have to be ready, and you have to want it, and you have to say, I'm worth it, because what's going on now is just not okay for me, if that's what people are saying out there. When it's time, the understanding of it, the knowledge of it, becomes less important to you. And it's more of, it just is. And
right.
You can't explain it in the mind. And I know that doesn't do anybody any good. But you know what, guys? There's still so much that my mind doesn't understand. But I've gotten far enough that I know nothing.
Absolutely.
And
with the plastic fork.
That's right, the elephant with the plastic.
And I'm going to eat that sucker.
Exactly.
She's been hacking away for 50 years and she doesn't have a thimble yet.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's fine.
That's right. And if you meet the Buddha on the street and he tells you he's the Buddha, run.
Gotta kill him. And you have to. We all have to be the Buddha in the subway. You have to be the Buddha in the underground, in paradise, wherever we go, in the ghetto.
And there's nobody special that can do it. Rena isn't doing it because Rena was born as an avatar. We're all avatars. Surround yourself with people. Just take one, maybe a yoga class. Maybe go to a meet and greet. Maybe look up how to cook and take a class you've never taken before. Like I always say, pull out of your driveway. If you always make a right,
make a left. How's about go and cook in the soup kitchen?
Sure. But you know what? Who in you is serving the food in the soup kitchen? Because if I walk in to volunteer, as I do, and I'm in Katrina 2, and I'm so proud of myself that I'm volunteering, and I'm in there, and I'm like, poor people.
Then you're attached.
Then you're attached. So there has to be this element of already saying, as Gurdjieff has said, if you don't know you're in prison, you have no hope of breaking out. So just even listening to this podcast and saying, you know what? Some of what they said is a crock of shit. They're wackos and New Yorkers and some rock singer and some witch and some girl I don't even know named Kara. They all sound crazy. And you know what? Simultaneously, you also can be saying, one thing we said here piqued your curiosity and made you just go, well, maybe I should just question that next thought to do this or take that drug that I don't really need or abuse somebody verbally or react and move more into reflection than reaction. Just that one little tiny thing, if you heard it and it makes you just wonder, You could email me. You could email me to find Rena. And you know what? I'll even go so far as to say, because Kara's in a new endeavor now where she's going to be opening up a wellness facility that's going to be encompassing all methodologies, all models, all roles, because that's what all of these things are. And maybe someday I'll be in a place where I could dump all the methods and all the methodologies and all the this and the isms and the that. And I won't need the mala beads around my wrist. And I won't need Om Mani Padme Hum. But I do. And you know what? I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy about that. And someday we all get to be free. And all of those methods have to go too. Because it is, we are alone. Your biggest, worst fear, I got news for you. It's happening. You are alone. We are all alone. And you have a choice to walk around and feel that that's a betrayal to you and not a good thing. Or you could look at that like somebody like Rena does for 71 years and not really wanting to be around her parents, and her parents maybe not wanting to be around her, and having to hear, you know, that maybe she wasn't there for her children in the first years of their life, to then be woken up and woken up in ways of mind-altering substances, and woken up in ways through meditations and astrology and shamanism. And for Kara, who must be a very evolved soul to be born into getting Rena, and I'm sure it wasn't so great all the time for you, Kara. I'm not assuming that your childhood was like a piece of cake running around with, you know, a saint either.
She came home at 7 years old from school with a friend. And we had been partying. There were about 20 people that we lived with. We had been partying all night, and she opened the door, and people were just crashed, you know, on beanbags and hanging out and smoking the last bit of weed, whatever. And she said to her friend, "Let's go to your house to play." I heard that.
You heard? Did you know she heard that?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
But I know the story.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, one more quote before we end this, and I'm just so thankful that we got the chance to do this. But I do also want to recommend this magazine that I've, you know, I got it as a gift. It's called The Sun. I don't know, maybe everybody in the world has it, and I'm the last person to jump on board, but it's pretty cool. And there's this article entitled "As We Lay Dying," and it's about this man, Stephen Jenkinson. And it's a great article about his journey through palliative care. Your choice to, when you get diagnosed, if you get diagnosed with a terminal illness, your choice to maybe want to take matters into your own hands and maybe have a more mindful approach to the new awakening that is death. And palliative care helps people die consciously, mindfully. And I'm not going to get into the debate of whether it's right or wrong. I'm really not interested in that so much. What I'm interested in is that we should all have the choice. We weren't, you know, in this mind, at least, given the choice to be born. But, you know, after a lot of time in this incarnation, I feel like we should all be allowed to make that choice should we be diagnosed with a terminal illness. And this guy has done some really amazing work in it. And he describes in this magazine almost like a little bit of a recipe. One leg should be in your relationship with other human beings. It's not possible for you to be healthy when there are people living under a freeway overpass and cardboard boxes. Your health is dependent on theirs. The second leg is your relationship with all in the world that's not human. If you only have these two legs, you can try to live a good life, but it's like walking on stilts. The third leg is what gives you a place to rest, and that leg is your relationship with the unseen world. Everything not described by the other two. Having all three constitutes health. That's where it lives. This tripod sustains you. You don't exist as an individual without these relationships. Mm-hmm. And we know that the triad, you know, it's very present in Eastern philosophies and in your lines of thinking and in astrology. And that's the mind, body, and soul. And I really believe that Stephen is talking about that we don't need to down something, make something right to make something else wrong, make something wrong to make something else right. You don't have to believe us or anybody else. I mean, shit, I hope you don't believe me. And then I hope you get curious and you go on your own journey, because it's really about just getting a little bit of inspiration to seek other things than the mind and the ego and our reflexes. And I recommend picking up this article because he talks so much about our relationships and how asleep we are in thinking that if you don't eat meat, that's all you need to do. And there's a lot of yogis walking around, you know, preaching that don't eat meat, but they'll wear leather shoes and then, you know, eat kombucha, drink kombucha, but then they go and tell the bum to get a job. And,
right.
You know, we have to love ourselves in those moments. I'm saying be all those things. Be what you are. Just cultivate the witness at the same time so that you can witness that and realize that even that is a relative reality.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a relative reality. We're both here and not here. And that doesn't mean that you stop doing your accounting job to go live in India. It's right here. Your accounting job is an ashram. It's all up to you. You could find me at functionalyogaonline.com. You can email me at zooming, ZITL course at gmail.com. I will share with you any information about Rena getting her book. I'd love to put it on my website and you can order it from her, because I know that when I get it, it's Rena. It's her journey. It's how to make all of this practical. And listen, I don't know, maybe you're in the Bronx, New York. That can happen. Maybe you're in Jerusalem. That can happen. Maybe you're in Uganda. That can happen. And maybe you're in Rockland County, New York, and it could still happen. It's not better on the other side. It should be better right here. So, Rena, you've been a teacher for me for forever and probably many lifetimes. I love you both so much, and thank you for coming on and sharing everything with us. Namaste. Happy Guru Purnima.
Happy Guru Purnima.
Full moon in Aquarius. It's the blue moon because Aquarius is the water bearer and the water is blue, although it's not a blue moon in reality.
Right.
Aquarius is the sign of humanity. It's a very good time to do something for someone else and not tell anybody.
Oh.
Love you.
Put a quarter in somebody else's meter.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's right. Oh, I love that. All right. So everybody, go and do your rituals and your customs, and we love you, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us on Zooming in the Lens. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for Zooming in the Lens special podcast, episode number 13. If you'd like more information on Ian Hatton for music or editing, please go to mixforpicks.com. If you'd like information on buying Rena Joy's book, There Are No Secrets, please send an email to renajoy@optonline.net. She's also available for phone and Skype readings. You could also shoot me an email at zitlcourse@gmail.com. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you soon.